everyone. I'm Sarah Sewell, and I'm the Executive Director for the Down Syndrome Association of Central Oklahoma.
And I'm Kathy Trout, and I also work at the Down Syndrome Association, and I'm a parent of a child with Down syndrome who is soon to be 19.
So we're here to welcome you to DASCO Up for Discussion. It's our brand new podcast where we talk about all things Down syndrome.
So whether you're a parent, a self-advocate, a sibling, a friend, or just somebody who wants to know more about Down syndrome, this is the podcast for you.
So we're going to share stories, learn how you can get resources, answer any questions. Most importantly, just celebrate the incredible individuals in our community.
So with that, let's get down to the basics, Sarah.
So for this first episode, we want to start with something very personal. It's our own journey, experiences of having a child with Down syndrome. We know that everyone's story is different, but if you're listening today as a new expected parent, we want you to know that you're not alone. So Kathy, we're going to start with you, and you tell us about the moment when you were expecting Addie.
Okay, so I went to a regular last in your last trimester, you're going to visits more frequently. And so I'd gone to my OB, and they detected an irregularity in her heartbeat. So they sent me back over to the specialist, and he gave me three options. He said that he thought there was something going on with her heart. They weren't for sure, but that I had three options. I could deliver, I could go home and wait for the baby to come naturally. I could be induced, or we could do a C-section. And Kevin and I talked about it, and we said we were ready to see this baby. And yeah. So we decided to have a C-section. So that day, went home, got all of our stuff, and went back to the hospital. She was born, and her APGAR score was a 9.5 mm-hmm. when she was born. Everything was great until it wasn't.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, her breathing started. She started struggling with her breathing. Everybody was kind of talking and looking around like, is there something else? Mm-hmm. Is there something that we need to look at or something?
Yeah.
And so they told me they were going to run a test called a FISH test. And that's just a blood test to confirm whether a child does or does not have Down syndrome. Back then you have to wait at least 72 hours to find that out. So we did the test, and then they did know there was something going on with her heart. They weren't for sure what it was. So they sent her to the NICU. She was the biggest baby by far in the NICU. We were all so excited. Her hair was a little bit reddish, mm-hmm. But pretty blonde. We were all just so excited. 3 days passed, and they came in and told us that she did, in fact, have Down syndrome. And it was devastating. I thought at the time it was devastating. We didn't know what to do. We were excited, but we were scared.
Was Addie your first?
She was my first. We had tried forever to have a baby. I mean, I was 35 years old when I got pregnant.
I just wanted a baby.
as sad as I was at the time, I was so excited that we just had a baby.
That's scared.
Terrified. She had to stay in the NICU for 8 days. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably one of the worst days, was the day that I had to leave. We had to leave and leave her in the NICU.
Right.
And we didn't get to take our baby home with us. So that was sad. But I knew from the very beginning that she was going to do, I just knew she was going to do great things. I knew that we were going to give her all the tools that we could, you know, find, and all the things that we knew what to do to give her the best life, no matter what that life was going to be like for her. So mm-hmm. it was scary, and it was sad. And I don't know why I get upset when I tell the story, because it, I think the emotions are just still so raw,
right?
Because it was just the unknown. It was more the unknown of anything. Went home 8 days later, she got to come home. The worst part was 5 weeks after having her is she had open heart surgery because she did have an ASD, a VSD, and a PDA. Her heart was not developed fully. But after that, she's been a ball of fire.
Talk a little bit about the heart surgery, because did she have to stay in the hospital very long for her heart surgery?
No, that was shocking. We went to have the surgery 5 weeks after she was born. She literally, I think two or three days after open heart surgery, they were wanting us to move to another floor. And Kevin and I are looking at each other like, is she ready to go? I mean, she has stitches down her sternum. And, you know, that was scary. But kids are so resilient.
They are.
And especially our kids. Mm-hmm. We moved down to the floor below the PICU. And then the very next day we went home. And that was scary because you couldn't lift her arms up. There were, they set some parameters on what we could and couldn't do. But was smiling and happy and just your eating. Everything was great. We stayed in the hospital less time for her open heart surgery than she did when she was first born. So that's kind of my story. So mm-hmm. anyway, how about yours, Sarah?
Well, mine's a little different. Of course, everybody's is. Kirsten was my second baby because I have a daughter who is 3 years older than Kirsten. And I had no trouble getting pregnant. I was in my early 30s and had a great pregnancy, no issues. I had one ultrasound that didn't show any markers for anything. They just checked for the growth of the baby and to make sure she had 4 chambers in her heart. And I'll get to that in a minute. And really, I was supposed to have a healthy baby. Went in and I was starting to have contractions on July the 7th in the evening time. And I went home that evening, picked up Addie, and I just knew I was in labor. So she was about 2 weeks early, which is not considered preterm at all. I was supposed to have a baby shower the day I had her. So all my friends had gathered and we were supposed to have this baby shower on Saturday, but instead we had a baby. Yeah. So I started having contractions in the middle of the night, of course, called the hospital and they wanted to make sure they had a room. I went into triage and of course I was advancing, and sure enough, Kirsten was born July 8th at 8:29 a.m. And out popped this plump little baby with fat cheeks. And she had an Apgar score of over 9 as well. And really at the beginning, everybody kind of looked at her funny, but nobody said anything. But one of the things looking back that was very telling was they took Kirsten away for about an hour. And I didn't really realize how long the time had lapsed until I was like, where's my baby? And I looked at my husband and I said, can you go find her? And of course, they were just cleaning her up. But I think what they had been doing was doing all the tests to see, if she did have some type of disability. At that time, the pediatrician came in and said, well, we see some markers for Down syndrome, but we're not sure. And he offered to do the karyotype test and not the FISH test. About that time, my doctor came in because my doctor did not deliver her. He was not on call that day. And he wanted to do the FISH test. And I think, they're both looking out for different people. My doctor was looking out for my mental health and care. And, the pediatrician was wanting to know, does she have Down syndrome and what type? So the karyotype test takes 10 days because they have to map out all the chromosomes. So we didn't know until 10 days after she was born. And, of course, she has trisomy 21. But I remember those days in the hospital just thinking back to, what was she going to be like? Like, I had all the questions. Will she get married? Will she live on her own? Immediately thinking. And then just trying to look at all the markers. Does she have the slanted eyes? And comparing her baby pictures to Addie. And so I think that really struck hard. Of course, I got the news of her diagnosis at 5:30 p.m., because doctors always deliver news after five. that's always been the saying. And of course, you know, he was really gentle in his delivery. He said, she does have trisomy 21. And I just said, okay, what's next? And immediately he said, she needs to have her heart checked. We need to make sure everything's good there. So they had already set up a sonogram for her the next day. So we went to the hospital, and she had an echo. And, of course, they did detect that she had a hole in her heart. She had an ASD and a VSD. She basically didn't have a septum. And then she had a PDA valve that was not going to probably close. So it was next day we go and have that ultrasound to check her heart, and they see something. And then the following day we were in the cardiologist's office, and he has this picture of her heart, and he's drawing all the things of how the blood flows. And I'll never forget, you know, he said, and I quote, in order for her to have continuous quality of life, we have to have open heart surgery. And of course, at that point, you know, my heart sank to the floor because I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that would do for her. It was just really scary, yeah. You know, that unknownness. And then, you know, I was a working mom. How am I going to work and take care of this new baby? At that point, Down syndrome went to the back burner because I was more concerned about her health. Yeah. But at the same time, I was trying to process it all and learn about Down syndrome. And of course, you know, within a couple of weeks after I had processed everything and got the diagnosis, I did reach out to the Down Syndrome Association for some help and support. And that's where I met my family mentor, and she brought me a bag. So that kind of eased it all. But I will say, you know, like you said, it's that fear of the unknown and just not knowing, you know, what's your child going to be like? What are they going to do? But yet you have this beautiful, darling little baby just cooing back at you and smiling and really reassuring that, you know, everything's going to be okay. And it has been. But for the most part, it's also been a long journey of advocacy. And I'm sure you
know. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I wasn't ready to call the Down Syndrome Association, but I felt like I had this. I felt like I could do this. Yeah. I didn't need help. This is my baby and I can handle this. And although I still sort of feel that way to this day, I mean, it is my baby and I want to do what I need to do for her. But I just feel like the Down Syndrome Association has brought like a community that I never thought I needed or wanted or had, you know. They've brought support. They've brought, I mean, just so many resources. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started working here 4 years ago, I really struggled with, do I want to live it and work it? That was a big question for me. And I'm so thankful I chose to come here because just the resources that I thought I knew that I didn't know has been immeasurable. I mean, I can't even, just being here and hearing all the things that are available to our kids now that when our kids were born, there weren't available, you know, so I'm so thankful.
I think when I got my first packet, it was apply for Social Security. So apply for this waiver, which I didn't know anything about, but which you're not going to get it for 18 years, Sarah. And then it was make sure you get signed up with Sooner Start. And those were the three things. So I think at that point it was just trying to take care of Kirsten's health that I was most concerned about. Yeah. And then I gradually learned, okay, these were common health conditions related to Down syndrome. But at the same time, I don't know, the Down syndrome part, it just became, like I said, the back burner. I think what was really hard was that open heart surgery, like you said.
Oh, yeah, that was probably our worst day. Yeah, when we had to hand her off to go to that surgery, that was horrible.
I mean, I told the nurse.
Yeah.
I handed Kirsten to her and said, you better bring her back to me.
Yeah.
She was like, I promise we will. I was like, you can't make that promise, but I understand. But I know, I mean, I held her all night long because I just wanted her close to me, and then, you know, knowing her little chest cavity wasn't going to be the same again, you know, really kind of broke my heart. And Kirsten had pulmonary hypertension after heart surgery, so she was a really sick baby. Oh. And so we didn't come home like Addie did. We were in the PICU for a month, and she was on the ventilator for 25 days. So that's not, you know, common.
Yeah.
But she pulled through. Like you said, they're resilient. Mm-hmm. She just had a hard time with breathing after she came off the ventilator on her own and learning all of that all over again. So that was really hard. Mm-hmm. She did code 3 times while we were there. And, you know, that was really, really scary. And, you know, that's kind of the one of the things when we meet new parents and they tell us, you know, your baby's going to have heart surgery and you and I have been through it, mm-hmm. right? But it's still something you can't prepare anybody for, do you think?
No. It's devastating.
I mean, it's just hard. It's just something hard that we got to go through. But we know our kids, the survival rate is like 99% or something. Yeah. Don't quote me on that percentage. Yeah. But I don't know if any babies that have, within our community, that have passed recently of a heart surgery.
Right.
So I know we have a great heart surgeon here. And I was thankful that we were able to stay in Oklahoma for that, for sure. But that was really scary, and just managing, you know, that whole process and making sure she was okay. But we came home. So Kirsten's heart surgery was on Halloween Day, and then she came home on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, gosh.
So I guess you could say it, she's kind of the holiday baby. She has big things happening on holidays, and she does like to celebrate them. It's been fun watching her grow, but I'm glad her little heart's mended now.
Yeah. So if you were to look back, is there anything you would tell yourself different, like the Sarah now today? Mm-hmm. Is there anything you would say to that young Sarah that's having a baby with a disability?
I think don't be so scared and ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Because now I ask everything. And I think then I just was too timid to ask because I was so worried and so focused on her that I couldn't even think of the questions. I was still like, you know, kind of down in the trenches and I couldn't really process or think what was next. Sarah, today, I've got a notebook and everything written out, and I've got questions prepped before we even go to the doctor. And that's all because of just experience and, you know, going along this journey for the last 18 years. But I think, and just saying, you know, this is going to be okay. Yeah. And I know every one of our mentors tell us that.
It is. So I think my biggest takeaway would be you listen to what others have to say and listen to their guidance. But you're still in charge of your own kid. And mm-hmm. so you do what's best for your kid. You don't, you know, I respect and value everybody's opinion that I get. But I still know each one of our kids are so different than the other. And so I think it's important to do what you know is best for your kid. And it's going to be okay. It's not, I mean, mm-hmm. Our lives are so much better with her.
Sure. Well, and I think just to piggyback on what you said, I led with my gut. Whatever my mom's gut was telling me, I was always leading with that and answering those questions there. But I was pretty timid and not outspoken, you know, that stage in my life. And now I ask a lot of questions. I stand up a lot more. I let my voice be heard, kind of like our kids say, let our voices be heard.
Yes.
Because they should and they can and all the things. But you're right, though. Kirsten definitely makes us see things through a different lens and a different perspective. And our heart surgery situation was pretty terrifying because we didn't have a great care team. One of the nurses there was pretty rude and obnoxious with my family, and that made the healing process and the process a lot harder. And had I known the resources there at the hospital then, I would have definitely used them, but you don't know what you don't know, right? And that's kind of what you go with. And but she's quite something, as you know.
They both are. So it's not just about parents. Our goal of this podcast is to reach educators, healthcare professionals, siblings, friends, anyone who wants to understand better and what it means to have a person in their life with Down syndrome.
You know, this is just the beginning, and we have so many important conversations ahead, and topics like early intervention, inclusive education, healthy advocacy, and real-life stories from some of our self-advocates.
But we want to hear from you. So if you have questions, ideas, topics, we'd love to hear. We'd love for you to discuss and reach out. You can email us at info@dsaco.org or visit our website at dsaco.org.
And please don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss one of our famous episodes that we've started. And if you found this episode helpful, you know, share it with a friend or a family member, somebody you know that might be expecting a loved one with Down syndrome, to help us spread the awareness and just be stronger within our community.
Thanks for joining us for our first episode of DASCO Up for Discussion.
Yeah, and we can't wait to continue our journey with you. And remember, every step forward is a step toward a more inclusive world. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.